It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannacco's here, so is Renee Ritchie and Alex Lindsay. We're going to take a look at Apple's quarterly results, what they mean, whether the big phone from Samsung announced today makes any difference for the next Apple iPhone, and Apple gets out of a $625 million verdict. Or does it? It's all next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 518, recorded Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016. Walk a little more funky. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, your business, your online store. Enter the offer code MACBREAK to get 10% off. And by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MACBREAK for 30% off your entire order. And by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check it out at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And we have assembled the team, the big team. Once again, Alex Lindsay is joining us from his fortress of solitude.
It's very quiet in here.
It is. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful
place. It's
the only
quiet I get.
Good.
And you can put me anywhere. See, I gave you the green. I'm expecting it.
We should have some fun with green.
Send me to the beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Also with us, Renee Ritchie. He's in Montreal and has no choice about it.
Nope. Stuck. Can't change. I got to get Alex to hook me up.
Must not move. Do not go anywhere. Even the Scarlet Witch can't help you now, Renee.
Oh, no. No more Montreal.
Andy Iannacco of the Chicago Sun-Times.
See, and here we see the brilliance of having this type of backdrop. I could be anywhere in the world right now, and you would never know until a gust of wind blows it down, and you see the Fiji Islands behind me.
You take that backdrop with you. What's your hat say?
Oh, this is the classic Hayward Fire Department hat.
Like it. Nice.
That I did a podcast for somebody who is a firefighter, and he sent me a work shirt, and this hat, and they're both like the nicest thing. The job shirt is like what a firefighter wears like underneath the coat, and it is like the most intensely warm thing I own. And it's
a firefighter would need to be warm.
Going outside in freezing weather with spraying water places.
And water. Yeah, frozen water.
I just have to make sure, like, in the winter that this is sometimes my daily wear hat, and I might be wearing, like, the job shirt, which also has the Hayward Fire Department emblem on it because it's warm. They'll go out and run an errand, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm wearing, like, firefighter hat, firefighter shirt. it's like a...
Just hope there's not a fire, and somebody says, like, hey, help us!
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just wearing the clothes.
Sorry, coward.
I'm a coward.
So as we wrapped the show yesterday, Renee Ritchie ran off to file and listen to the analyst call as Apple reported its quarterly earnings for Q3. And what's the upshot?
They made a ton of money. There was a slight bit of hope because, you know, sales either weren't as bad as people expected, or in some cases, like iPad. There's a huge challenge here because year-over-year compare is very difficult because the iPhone, all the iPhones last year sold gangbusters because there was such pent-up demand for bigger-screened iPhones, and that continues to resonate throughout this year. So people either bought early, they were not planning to upgrade, but they saw the big phones and they bought them, and so this year they didn't buy an iPhone, or just people who'd never considered an iPhone rushed to get iPhones. So Apple did make billions and billions of dollars, but no longer is there record-breaking profits in front of every one of their earning releases.
The SE was a big seller, apparently, kind of making up for a little bit of a slump in iPhone sales.
Yeah. Yes and no. It's also less expensive, so it hurts them on average selling price, which is one of the big metrics that people look for. So they don't make as much money or margin on the SE
Do we know where it sold well? I mean, it was aimed at the kind of the developing nation, the China market.
The BRIC countries, so absent China, I think the Brazil, Russia, India, I mean, though I think it was a big surprise. I think a lot of people expected it to sell well in countries where they wanted a less expensive phone, but it's not, I mean, it is a
little
bit less.
It's only $100 less, right? It's
yeah.
So
but it turns out people really wanted a smaller phone, and I think that caught people by surprise. Like some internet people kept saying, I love the iPhone 5. The new ones are too big. I can't use them one-handed. But you never know when that's just nerds complaining or it really is a harbinger of a trend. And they just sold a ton of the phones, probably because they were smaller phones. And it turns out there is a percentage of any population. When you get big enough, when you're selling hundreds of millions of units, even if it's 10%, that's still tens of millions of people who want that smaller phone. And so this shows, I think, that the market is so mature, you've got to start segmenting it now. And you can make a lot of money if you start playing to those important niches that are adjacent to your big flagship phone.
Q1's always their biggest quarter. That's the holiday buying season. Q4 sometimes benefits from the fact that you get maybe you get the iPhone bump in there at the very, very end.
Yeah.
So this is probably the worst quarter in general.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, but they're doing the year-over-year compare. And, you know, that's where Apple gets dinged on this.
Yeah, yeah. Third quarter net income down 27%. iPad shipments.
Or quarterly profit, I think, went down 27%.
Was net also, income. That same
right,
thing, right?
Net income. I'm sorry. Yeah.
4.2 million Macs, 9.95 million iPads. Service revenue, Apple's been pointing to this as their future, up 19%, almost $6 billion. That's revenue, not profit. But services are mostly profit, I would guess. So all in all, anything to deduce from Apple, from the numbers about Apple's future? Anything to – are we going to see more small phones?
I think we're going to continue. I think these are the three big phones. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of other options, and I don't think we necessarily need to. I think that we're waiting – we had planned to get the SE phones, then I just didn't quite get all the lists of all the people we needed to supply, and we're waiting to see what happens in the fall. But I think that for a lot of companies, for parents buying them for their kids, I think it's a great segment. And then I think that it really is a choice between screen size and pocket size and so on and so forth. I actually prefer the smaller of the two larger ones, the S Plus or the S and not the S Plus. I have both of them, and I just so I think that those are. I think that really fills a lot, the three. I think most important niches for Apple. I'm not sure if they would need to add any more.
I think it's interesting that now Apple's in the stage of the gold rush where they have picked up all the big nuggets of gold that were lying on the ground, and now it's going to be the part of trying to find where they've missed opportunities in their previous hoard. So they're not in the place where they take down entire mountains and try to get little fine-grained particles of gold anymore. But now's the time where, whereas before they were not going to necessarily be inclined to try to figure out how to sell to India, how to sell to all these other markets. Now it's time to figure out where they're leaving money on the table and then go pick that up. So part of that is cheaper phones, but another part of it is saying that it's not enough anymore for us to say we're not interested in making phones of this size. We don't think that works for consumers. We've done tests. Now it's down. It's really going to get more of these instances of we know now there's a big market for this type of phone, and for that reason, and if we're going to make money and B, make customers happy, we're going to have to throw away whatever data we think we have and say, great, okay, we will make a banana-shaped phone because people like banana-shaped phones and they're buying banana-shaped phones.
We mentioned this on Sunday, but I'll show it again. EverySecond.io, Neil Agarwal has written a really great site. He's actually expanded it to show Facebook and YouTube now. But this is what Apple does every second, 40... Yeah. Well, actually, as the time goes by at the top, it says it's been 10 seconds, 70 iPhones sold, 16 iPads sold, 7 Macs sold, 5 Apple Watches, 5 iPad Pros, and in the last 17 seconds, $120,000 in revenue, $27,000 in profit, 18,000 apps downloaded now in 24 seconds, 6,000 iTunes songs, $17,000 spent on the App Store. Now that it's half a minute, 14 million iMessages sent. I mean, this is just fun.
Yeah.
Just really.
If you keep scrolling down, do we get to see how much money they're making from Renee buying new watch bands?
Let's see the Renee watch band effect.
The thing that I thought was fascinating was that people aren't necessarily buying tons of apps anymore. They're spending more time in apps, but they're spending more of it in the same app. So it really is the Facebooks, the Snapchats, the Pokemon Goes that mainstream people are investing their time and money into. So that, I think, shows the maturity of the app market as well.
Yeah, that's what it's saying is you don't have that explosive growth anymore and people trying every app that comes down the line. You've got people found the things they need that do the things they want to do. And then every once in a while you get a Pokemon Go or,
Snapchat, the new hot network of...
Yeah, or what's that photograph app?
Prisma,
yep. You know.
It also provokes you to start looking at the numbers and trying to figure out how much is the loyalty towards the platform and the hardware, and how much is the loyalty towards the platform agnostic apps that happen to run on the platform. And so what is Apple going to have to do to make sure that they retain all of the iPhone users and all the iPad users that they have built up so far?
Well, I think that the part of it, though, is that for the ones that are paid, and the fact that so many people have paid for apps, even if they went to another platform, there's no easy way to basically rebind all those apps again. So even if they are available on both platforms, it doesn't necessarily mean people will jump right over.
A lot of these apps are actually services, so they wouldn't necessarily have to rebuy these apps. Right. They would just, again, I think it's going to be interesting to see how sensitive iPhone users, for instance, would be to. Let's say that Apple were to come out with a new phone that is missing something that they're counting on that just seems to a random user as, boy, it'll be a nuisance to have a banana-shaped phone instead of a flat one. No matter how strongly Apple says that a banana-shaped phone is the future, this is absolutely we've not used a flat screen here at Apple's since we had these prototype devices. They're wonderful. But once you have someone's the first time that you're shown a phone that is so uninteresting to you that you've been holding this cracked screen iPhone for the past 3 years. You really have money burning a hole in your pocket to buy a new phone. It's going to be interesting to see if people will say, well, I'm not willing to adapt. I'm willing to now look at other phones that are out there. So it's going to be.
Or just the commoditization. I mean, people might not care anymore about whether it's an Apple or not. They might just see a hot phone that they like. They might be bored with the current phone that they have and just want to try something new,
it's
or the
really
phone might become irrelevant.
On the Android side, I mean, I think at this point, Apple's kind of thanking their lucky stars that they are the only company that makes an iPhone, because on the Android side now you've got all this pressure from, this is an Axon from a Chinese company called ZTE, $400 with every feature that's
Huawei,
built in.
Alcatel.
Huawei, there's the OnePlus 3.
Yeah.
And these are commoditized at this point.
And the worst part of this for me is that we don't care anymore. If you look at the worst behaving apps on any platform, it's almost always Facebook, Snapchat, Pokemon Go. And people use them by the hundreds of millions. And they shred battery life, they're resource hogs, they abuse almost everything that's possible to be abused. And we're like, oh, look, I can catch something. I can snap with my friend. I can update my history line. And, you know, that's becoming the new norm. And people look and see, oh, well, you know, they used to say that we have to be optimized and run and mobile and it's all about that. They don't care. Whatever schlocky thing we can throw up, go throw up. And to Andy's point earlier, that makes it much less tolerant of what the phone can actually do, because they're not seeing it. They're seeing the worst implementation of the APIs on any platform.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the mobile CPUs are getting more and more powerful. And so therefore, you're kind of hidden from all the waste that all these apps are generating. And then we're talking about the $400 phones that seem, I would say that the typical $400 Android phone is built as well as any flagship phone of 2 years ago. I don't think they're built quite as well as an Apple phone or as a flagship Android phone is. I've dropped an iPhone 6S Plus onto a cobblestone street and almost didn't even bother to look at the screen before picking it up, because I counted on it still working. And it's not quite at that level. But still, you get things like the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 was just released this morning, or at least the press event was this morning. And it is. I wasn't there at a conflict, but I've been talking to people who were there, and it is a really handsomely built, beautifully constructed phone. And the problem is that, again, if you've got someone who's got $700 burning a hole in their pocket, they don't necessarily, there's nothing different enough about the iPhone 7, let's say, that really floats their boat.
There might be one of the things they mentioned at the Samsung event is they, hey, we still have
a headphone jack.
Well, yeah, but that,
and I think exactly. that may actually be a counter indication for the future iPhone, right?
That's a very big deal. That's what I'm really talking about. But also things like Samsung is really good at a lot of things, but one of the things they do a lot is here is a gimmicky feature that demos extremely well, gets a lot of attention. It is really, really cool in the store, and it's going to be awesome for the first 2 weeks you use it, but then maybe you won't ever use it again. So now they have Iris security that you can, you know, hold the thing up to your face. There is a separate, there is an infrared mode on the front-facing LED and a separate infrared camera that will actually read your iris, take an eye print of your everything in order to unlock the phone. And I'm not sure if that's going to be in any way more convenient than using a fingerprint reader, but nonetheless, there are people who are going to be in a store who says, wow, I can actually unlock it using my eyeball. That's awesome. Does it run all the apps that I use on my iPhone? That's awesome. Does it have a headphone jack? Of course it does. Yes, that's great. Sell me one of those.
The thing that I thought was super interesting is that for the last few generations, Samsung is getting hit with the same brick that Apple gets thrown up. And that, yeah, it's a great phone, but they're all great now.
It's impossible to differentiate. I mean,
the Galaxy S7 Edge, they're holding it side by side. And this is a seasoned reviewer going, it sits on top of this, but they're also similar now. I mean, like, they just,
And that's one of the reasons I think, and I disagree with you, Andy. It's one of the reasons I think these $400 phones are actually going to start becoming a problem for both Samsung and Apple. This Axon is every bit as well built as any state of the art modern phone. It's beautiful. It's phenomenal. It feels good. I don't think this is a compromise in any way.
I don't think it's a compromise. I'm saying that there's a difference between. I'm very, very sure that if I bought an iPhone 6S Plus, let's say, or if I bought a Samsung Galaxy 6, let's say, last year, I'm very, very certain that I can get that value back, or at least part of that value back in resale. Partly because these things are built really to tolerances where
that's
it will last.
Perception, at least, Andy.
I'm saying it'll last about 3 years beyond the point at which I'm probably going to be in the market for a new phone anyway. I think that the $400 phones are built exceptionally well. I think they're built as better than anybody really needs it to be. I think the tolerance is that they're built to. They're built so that if you do drop them 2.5 feet onto cobblestone, you're 50-50 chance it's okay.
I disagree, Andy. You obviously haven't handled this phone. I completely disagree with you. I think you're wrong.
I've handled pretty much every phone that's kind of like that. I'm saying that these phones are largely unproven in that level of durability.
I think they're commodities, and that's you're right in that sense.
Oh yeah, there was two things with those phones is that I think for some people in established markets, they're going to want a store with the logo on it that they can go to if there's any problems.
Brand
and in some emerging markets, the brands, like, they want the esteem. Like they said in China, I think Ben Thompson said this. There's two things. There's this little wallet that you can buy and an iPhone, and they're cheap enough that most people can eventually afford one, and it's a huge status boom, and that really matters in some of those countries.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. In fact, even in this country it matters, but I think if in a purely objective point of view, if I handed you this in an iPhone 6S, I think you'd say this is every bit as good.
I think that they're every
and
bit
I'll drop
good,
it for you if you want.
I still think the challenge is that I have a couple Android phones and a couple iPhones that I'm using on a regular basis, and I still think that I think that Apple still has an edge on ease of use. I think that for us, maybe not, but when I hand it to somebody else, it's definitely there's a lot more that you can. There's actually more you can do on your Android, and there's also more pitfalls in the Android than on the iPhone. As far as you get it and use it, and I think that when I still think about who I would hand it to immediately, you know, I'd still pick an iPhone for someone unless I felt like they wanted kind of a more geeky end of things. And I think that that is still the edge that Apple has, and something that's still a gap that Android has to close.
I still think I've said for a long time, I still believe this to be true, that Apple excels at designing software and hardware that's really easy to use for the first 2 or 3 weeks. They don't design hardware that necessarily gets easier to use after 6 or 7 months. And the difference isn't necessarily the design of Android or Windows or anything like that. It's the amount of freedom that the user has later on to when they start poking around, they start trying to figure out, gee, I still hate the way that X works. Is there a way to fix that? And then you Google around or go to a wonderful site like iMore or one of its partner sites, and you find out that, oh, actually, I can change whatever. I can change the way that apps load, or I can change the way that this looks. And then it becomes becomes easier for that person because they've found the way to adapt the thing that will that's been a sticking point for them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question we're really asking is how price sensitive is this market? And are people willing to spend twice as much for a brand name and for a few ineffable things like maybe it's easier to use? Neo makes a good point in our chat room. Apple, if you break a screen, there are lots of places to go to get Apple screen replaced. I have no idea where I would go to get an Axon screen replaced.
Yeah, for Samsung, so, that's another difficulty. Samsung is about as easy to fix as anything else.
But it's the same cost, is the point.
It's probably less expensive because it's all third party stuff.
No, I'm just saying that is the $400 phone competitive with an $800 phone? It may be objectively, but there are these ineffable differences that probably, and I just don't know how price sensitive people are.
The bigger disadvantage, just to point out, is that, for instance, with a company like OnePlus, they're making probably some of the best phones that are discounted that you can possibly
buy.
Incredible,
yeah.
But the problem is they don't have the same resources as Samsung, which means that if you bought a OnePlus 2 last year, you just got Android 6 about a month ago, and the rumor has it that Android 7 is going to be released in 3 days.
That's actually going to be the biggest difference in the long run is on the Apple side. You know you're going to get all the updates. You just are, as long as you have a phone.
And the thing is that Apple's never wanted to compete for the attention of people for whom price is the most important feature. They're okay with price being somewhere in there, but if you're making a decision based solely on the price of it.
I understand. Saying, is that an old-fashioned strategy in a world where you can spend half as much money and get an equivalent phone? That's the question. Apple's only real advantage there is they're the only source of iPhones. So as with every other Apple piece of hardware, they can inflate the cost because there's nowhere else. There's no competition.
There's a lot of people.
Value price.
And is a $400 phone on another platform competition or not?
Is it so commodity that people are going to treat it like anything that you buy in the store?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say that there's a true differentiation between a Ford Fusion and a BMW, three series.
You're exactly right.
So I think that there are definitely people out there that are going to buy a 3 series, and they buy the 3 series for a variety of reasons, and that's a good market, still. It's really hard to say that the Ford Fusion is not as good as the...
No, that's an excellent point. That has held true, yeah.
I do think it's going to be more of a challenge for Apple in the coming years because now, remember when the iPhone started and for the 3 or 4 years after that, people weren't really aware of how much money they were spending on their phones because they were just simply getting their, quote, free phone, unquote. They're charging $100.
Right.
Now, basically, you go into the AT&T store and you buy a phone. And now when you're looking at, here is the phone the iPhone you came in to get. Here is a phone that's to the Toyota Corolla purchaser is pretty much the same build quality, same features, and it costs an entire car payment less. That's when people start thinking, well, why? Not that they're going to be skeptical about the iPhone, but they're going to at least start asking questions as, what is this other phone going to give me for an extra $250 that this other phone will not be able to do for me? And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in future sales.
Yeah, and the thing that I've been working on, which iPhone is best for which person for a long time, and we're working on a guide for it. But I was talking to some people in the industry trying to figure that out and saying, like, is the iPhone SE the less expensive alternative? And I thought that they would all say that because the sticker price is much smaller when you first go in. But they were all saying no. And that surprised me. People really are buying it for the size. And they thought that, especially now that it's been sort of decomposed and you can see the full price, that they would be super sensitive. But they realize that they're going to be paying this off over a year, over 2 years. And they're starting to understand total cost of ownership better now, which you think they would have cared about that more previously because the prices of the contracts were so high. But they just never had to think about it because it was this one payment thing. But now they're starting to think about it. They are seeing that. And they're saying, well, it really works out to $5 more, $10 more, or I'm paying so much. It's going to be almost exactly the same thing over 2 years. So why shouldn't I get the better phone, the one that I'm really happy with? And I think that's an interesting angle that's starting to play out in the industry in North America.
Let's take a break. We're coming back with more conversation. There is a new Galaxy Note. Does it threaten the iPhone? Apple borrows $7 billion. Why? And what are they going to do? And a world-renowned Nobel Prize-winning economist says Apple's Irish tax strategy is fraud when we come back. But right now, I want to tell you about the best place to make your next website, Squarespace. The more I use Squarespace, the more I realize what a valuable product this is, and how, and I don't understand how they offer it so inexpensively. Squarespace is the best hosting and the best software married together to give you a beautiful website for your business, for your personal site, from a simple cover page to a perfect portfolio to your online store. It all is included with your Squarespace website, whether you're a designer, a photographer, a filmmaker, maybe you've got a restaurant, you're a writer, you're a band. They've got a site, a design for you. Lots of templates. And these templates not only combine state-of-the-art engineering, things like mobile responsive design, e-commerce, all built in, but also the finest, most beautiful design. So you get the best of both worlds. You sacrifice nothing. They have some of these new five news magazine style templates, which I love. That include grid style landing, you know, like iMore. You get a grid style landing page or The Verge. You get infinite scroll. Related posts to automatically appear at the bottom, encouraging visitors to read more. You'll get author profile pages, integrated search right in the header so readers can find what they want. And that's just one template. And, you know, your content is independent of the template. So if tomorrow you say, I'd like to try a new look, you can easily. It's designed by pros to look great. But, of course, if you want to get geeky, you can get really down into it. All the settings are customizable, font, color, page configurations. If you're a developer, you can even start with a blank template, have all the engineering behind the scenes, and do your own thing on top of it. We've used for Elisa's new site, Artisanal Agency, we used a Squarespace designer. Very affordable. They did the whole thing. And then for a small fee every month, she gets all the updates. This, you know, it was a choice between that and me doing it. And I said, hey, Lisa, looks like they've got these great designers. And I'm actually really glad. In fact, it impresses me so much. I'm thinking I would be doing this if I didn't have a lot more, you know, kind of to prove to people. Artisanalagency.com. Take a look at it. It really is beautifully done. And she didn't have to do any work. It's really, really incredible. I want you to try Squarespace right now. Get a free custom domain with an annual purchase. Great 24/7 support. And they now have their own domain registrar. So you can browse over 200 top-level domains, not just .com and .net, but like hundreds of others. Buy it from Squarespace domains. And even if you're not ready to put up a site, you'll get a clean, spam-free, ad-free parking page until you're ready to start building. And I think that's awesome. If you have three or more active Squarespace sites, and I know a lot of you do, now you have something called the Squarespace Circle. Membership includes advanced guides, optimized support, and longer trial periods for new projects and more. It's really cool. 6-month trial periods. Squarespace. I shouldn't have to sell you on this. It's just great. Go to my site, leolaporte.com. Go to artisanalagency.com. Check out what we're using Squarespace for. Check out the templates, set up your free trial, and if you decide to buy, the only thing I ask, use our offer code MACBREAK. That way you get 10% off your purchase. Squarespace, the place to make your next website. MACBREAK Weekly on the air with Renee Ritchie of iMore.com and Alex Lindsay of PixelCore.com and, of course, Andy Inoko of the Chicago Sun-Times. Pating. This is like... It's like the match game or something. Each of you get
the
little...
double Isaac.
What was that game? Hollywood Squares. Somebody's asking, is Georgia Dow still writing for you, Renee, or not?
Yeah, she's on. She does a column, so it's usually every 2 weeks, every month. She just did a really, really good one on the Breathe app for the Apple Watch, yes. Because that's always, whenever she starts someone in therapy, she starts them off with breathing, and it's incredibly brilliant. Important.
Brilliant.
And she just loves a new app.
So there you go. Yeah, we love Renee. I mean, we do love Renee, but we also love Georgia, and so we want
to... I'm a poor shadow compared to them.
No, not at all, not at all. Let's see, what else? Let's talk a little bit about the Galaxy Note 7, announced this morning, available for pre-order tomorrow on all carriers, and you'll get it on the 19th. Of course, I will have to order one and immediately insert the pen backwards to see what happens.
You're safe. It's so much better than the Galaxy Note 6, Leo.
There is no Galaxy Note 6.
It's 100% better than the Galaxy Note 6.
Skipped right ahead because they want to keep in track with their Galaxy S7. Looks like, as you said, Andy, a swollen not swollen, enhanced, a larger Galaxy S7 with a stylus. The stylus, though, really, they're smart because that is a differentiator. The iris, I guess, as well.
Yeah, all phones are big now. I mean, the size used to be.
Size really does not do it.
Yep. The first CES, they had them on the tables. You went into the Samsung room, and there was the first Galaxy on the table. And it was so big, you could barely see the table.
Yeah.
And we all had tiny, I think I had an iPhone 4S and a Nexus 1 back then. And you could stack them. Like, we stacked, nine Palm Vieres on top of the original Galaxy.
This Axon, this $400 Axon, is bigger than, or the same size, I think, as the original Note. It doesn't feel or look big to me. It looks normal. It's 5.5 inches.
Yeah, so now the pen is, the differentiator.
Right. You've got phablets. We don't even use the word phablet, thank God.
It's just a phone.
It's just a phone.
It's about
the same size as the Nexus 6P, and it's just basically standard.
Right, they got a couple of digs in Apple. They did mention headphone jack, and he waited, paused to hear see if the audience would get it. They took them a while, but they eventually laughed or applauded or whatever.
It bears mentioning, this is why we talked about this a lot last week, but this is why Apple has to make sure that if they delete the headphone jack, they get their messaging straight, because this phone, not only does it have a headphone jack, it has a big, huge hole for the receptacle for the pen. It also has speaker grills, and it's still IP68 certified, just like the Galaxy 7. So
it's not waterproof is not the issue. You can make it waterproof with all that stuff.
Right, exactly. So they'll have to, if they're looking for reasons for pro-consumer reasons why they deleted the headphone jack, they're going to have to delete that off the list.
Also, the Type-C momentum for the connector is building now. I would say every phone except an iPhone in the next year will have a Type-C connector.
I keep getting sample phones in month after month after month, and pretty much all the flagship phones that seem to be coming in are switching to USB-C.
So. As they should. It has many of the advantages of Lightning.
And those cables are rock solid now. Don't need to worry about those anymore.
Thanks to Benson Leung at Google, we can now trust our Type-C cables. Let's see. Iris scanner. We'll see. Fingerprint reader works so well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, so it's fast. Could Iris maybe be more secure because you can't cut somebody's
phone? I could imagine them pushing. Are they doing both on this?
They're doing both.
I think you could have some people that wanted to, two forms of ID, or either or as well.
They did announce a number of banks, including Bank of America, are adopting Iris reading as another form of authentication.
Evidently, I've heard that, and I haven't actually seen it myself, that in Bank of America, I think it's if you have $10 million in the bank,
you have to give them an iris scan.
They actually send you one you put on your computer if you want to get into your account. That already exists for the banks, for their profile clients.
It'll come down to how well they implemented this. There's already a lot of security experts who seem to be saying that the fingerprint reader is not necessarily vulnerable, but it's not invulnerable. There was a story, was it last week or the week before, about how a murder victim had a phone, and the authorities wanted to unlock it, and they did manage to, through a lot of equipment, basically reproduce the victim's thumbprint or fingerprint and correctly unlock that phone. Fortunately, there wasn't a passcode behind it as well. This required a special printer, for instance, that could deposit conductive ink and reproduce a fingerprint conductively. They tried a 3D scanner and 3D printer. That's also $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 device. But it's the difference between if someone was really motivated to do this, could they do it? It's also unknown how well it would work with simpler stuff or more clever people who are more motivated. So, but it will come down to people trying to break this retina scanning and see if it actually turns out to be maybe a less convenient than fingerprint scanning, but perhaps more resistant to miscreants.
To be clear, it's not retina scanning; it's iris.
I'm sorry,
scanning.
It's iris scanning. It takes an infrared photo of your
the colored part of your eye. And apparently the formations there are unique and, more importantly, don't change over time, so that is a useful way to identify you. It's not the first one. Microsoft put out an iris scanner on the Lumia 950 and 950 XL, and it was unusable. So you spent a lot of time with the phone going up, down, no, close, no, a little farther, no, a little close.
Nexus machines.
Well, then you also get into
A Nexus machine.
Can it go through sunglasses? Can it go through prescription? What level of prescription?
You've been drinking. How red are your eyes?
Yeah. So this may be gimmicky. This may be something great. We just don't know until we get.
But they're meant to be conveniences. I think sometimes people think they're security features, but when they were introduced, all companies were very clear to say that, you know, people just don't use passcodes because they can save them a pain. And this is better security with convenience. So it's better than not having anything. It is not as good at having a long, like if you want, you can have a Steve Gibson 32-bit, you know, random passcode that you just put in there and that's it. And nobody can get into that phone.
That's very secure. Right.
It is, but it's so hard for you to
nobody
get.
Nobody wants basically to do it. Yeah.
A thumb code, I mean, if you fall asleep, someone in your house can come and put your thumb on the phone. It's not a security. They can open your bleary eye and try.
One of the nice things about fingerprints is you can give a family member one of the fingerprints if you wish, or somebody you trust. And I like that because then I don't have to give them a password, but I can give them, they can quickly get into my phone if they need to. The fingerprint works so well. I will not buy a phone without a fingerprint reader now. Yeah. It's a requirement. One of the things Samsung did announce is they're going to have, and this is interesting, a secure folder that requires, it wasn't clear, but it requires an additional step of security to open, and you could put stuff in there, and even if your phone's unlocked, nobody's going to be able to get to it. I thought that was interesting.
Right. So if you're concerned about your banking app, for instance, you could basically have fingerprint unlocking for most everything, but then say, no, I'm going to need an eyeball in order to get into my banking app or to get into my Snapchat or stuff like that.
This is something, of course, Apple does so well, the secure enclave and so forth. And I think Samsung and Knox, which is their security platform, have proven to be just as desirable. In fact, in some cases, government installations. I think the Pentagon has approved Knox. But has not yet approved the iPhone for use in secure installations.
Yeah, I've read, but have not talked to anybody who could confirm this to me, that Knox is one of the reasons why the president's phone is an Android phone.
Exactly, yeah. Well, it's an older Android phone. I think it also has to do with the open source nature of it, probably.
Not because it's better, but because it has been certified, whereas the iOS equivalents haven't been certified.
I just want that everywhere. Like, I want a setting that you can go into any app and just say require authentication to open.
Wouldn't that be great?
Every app should have that. Because third-party apps on iOS have that. You can, like, all my banking apps and 1Password require a thumbprint to open them. Just make that part of the package. Anyone can use that. All the standard apps have that. Turn it on. Make it off by default. Turn it on in settings. That way your messages, your photos, everything, it just has a chance to be secure if that's what you want.
Yeah. And Renee is spot on. It's like as soon as my banking app added fingerprint recognition to the iOS app before the Android app, and I'm like, please come on, man, add this to the Android phone, because I usually carry like both phones with me on a day to day basis just so I can stay hip. And it's like, I would much rather like make sure that Wi-Fi hotspot is always turned on, make sure that my second iPhone is connected to that, and always sign in with my fingerprint. It is that much easier. And that's also the reason why I should say that if Apple can make things even easier, I'm such a big fan of putting the scanner on the back instead of at the front of the home button. And because I'm reaching in my pocket, I'm taking it out, and my finger just happens to be here,
so
and
natural.
It simply unlocks.
That's the Nexus 6P.
This is the 5X.
Or the 5X. The Nexuses do that.
Sure that you,
the Samsung
sure you
still has it on the front, you know, the home button. Yeah. The Axon does have it on the back, which it's a very natural place to put that, I think.
I don't know about Android, but I think the end game for Apple is just going to be anywhere you touch the screen, it'll authenticate you.
I think the patents are out for that. I don't know when they're going to start implementing
it. I think they want to at least make one section, like somewhere on the screen here, an omni focused thing. If you can't necessarily open up the passcode by touching anywhere, at least here is one section where they can at least draw a circle or draw a fingerprint logo and say, here's what you touch.
Poke to log in.
Yes.
Well, that's the potential for the iris scanner.
To make sure that I get a good print off of your eyeball.
Yeah, the potential for the iris scanner is great. If it works as well, I mean, face recognition was dopey, but if the idea is it could just... You just kind of are there and you hold the phone up, or maybe you even don't have to hold the phone up, and it just knows it's you because it can see your iris. That would be the ideal.
Yeah. Ambient authentication is just the end game. When it can pull enough vectors, like it knows your fingerprint, it knows your iris, it can pull together whatever 3 or 4 bits it can and have a really high likelihood that it's you, and then just opens.
I predict we will have that in the next few years. That's coming. Absolutely.
There are also some researchers who are trying to work on really subtle other metrics. Like, again, if I take my phone out of my pocket, it can sense by how it's moving and how it's twisting. Okay, he took it out of his left pocket and he fumbled with it a little bit before getting it getting it lit up.
He
and
always does that.
whoever tried to take this phone out took it out of a back pocket, and we have not seen Andy actually take a phone out of a back pocket yet.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that I'm going to trust what I know before, but where I'm going to make sure I use a little extra authentication, or I'm going to cut Andy a little bit of slack if he has, if his, the way he unholstered the phone was within 0.1% of how he usually does it.
And I think a lot of people don't know that multi-touch is actually three-dimensional. It radiates out of the screen, which is why some companies choose to use it to do distance gestures and things. But all of them use the same fundamental technology. So you can start mapping where the fingers are holding. So if someone is touching a phone, you can start building up a profile. This is how, you know, Leo usually unlocks his phone, or this is how he usually taps the screen. These fingers are bent. These fingers are straight. This is the arrangement, the distance. And you can start measuring those things. That becomes another trigger.
Or how you walk, the pace, you know, your gait. There's all sorts of things. Your voice. I mean, there's so many ways you could fingerprint a phone.
Computer.
I'm sorry. I can't unlock your phone. Try to walk a little bit more funky.
try to be just like a little more you.
You used to have a silly walk.
I will now play Sheena Easton's Strut Pout Put It Out Is What You Want for Women. Please dance accordingly as we know you do.
I just sprained my ankle. I can't walk, and my voice is really high pitched right now. But please, I need into my phone.
I would like to open this, but you've lost your muchness.
You've lost your mojo.
Why is Apple, which has more than $200 billion in the bank, borrowing $7 billion? They finalized a 5-part bond sale.
Taxes.
Is this because of domestic and overseas money, Leo?
Yeah, they can't spend that money. Most of it's overseas. They can't spend it.
They could, but they'd have to give the government, what is it, 25% of it?
30%.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the issue. The issue is that the United States tax code is much higher than most other countries, not just Ireland.
Well, Ireland's 12.5%. Right. So some might say that Ireland is artificially low. In fact, that's exactly what the EU says.
Well, and it's unclear whether they're actually even paying that. I mean, there's the whole Irish-Dutch sandwich thing,
right.
You know, has them not, you know, it's unclear what they're paying there.
And in some cases, they've paid tax to other countries already, and they just want to repatriate the money, but then they have to pay what they consider to be double taxes.
Well, in fairness, Apple is the largest taxpayer in the country. So, it's not that it's not paying any taxes. I think people have this impression that they're paying more taxes than anybody else. They're just not paying them on all the corporate profits that are generated overseas.
In an interview with Bloomberg, Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz said it was actually fraud. He didn't say it was illegal. He said our current tax system encourages companies to keep their money abroad. It's a vast loophole. But he said, here we have the largest corporation in capitalization, not only in America, but in the world, bigger than GM at its peak, claiming that most of its profits originate from a few hundred people working in Ireland. That's a fraud. A tax law that encourages American firms to keep jobs abroad is wrong, and I think we can get a consensus in America to get that changed.
Can you imagine how well-pampered those employees are, Leo? Can you imagine how well-pampered? They're in limousines.
Yeah.
No one's allowed to touch them.
Yeah. You know, what Apple did was, and by the way, Apple is far from alone in this. Every tech company, every big company does this. The small company can't get away with it. I tried. But every big company does. And the trick is to transfer, in this case, Apple's case, transfer your intellectual property rights to this small holding company in Ireland. And then all the profits go to that holding company and you only pay 12.5% corporate tax instead of the 35% you'd have to pay.
Really good whiskey and stew.
Yeah.
Really.
And I agree. You know, look, it is legal and that's their fiduciary responsibility. If you're their, you know, CFO to pay as little tax as you can legally pay. Why would you pay more? But at the same time, I also agree with Stiglitz. It's ethically questionable. I don't think Apple should change what they do, but I think the law needs to be changed and pronto. It's not.
Well, I think a more reasonable tax rate would probably bring a lot of money back. And I think that I think we pay a pretty big price for the higher tax rate. It's not just that there's all this rigmarole about paying taxes. It's that all that money that could be invested into things in the United States is not being invested into things in the United States.
700 American companies have international headquarters in Ireland.
Right.
that tells you something, right?
Must be the weather.
They're there for the weather. And even the EU is questioning Irish tax law and saying this maybe is a little bit, obviously
Let's question it before the Brexit. Too late. Sorry.
Yeah, too late now. sorry. Bye-bye. Actually,
that's true. The Ireland, Republic of Ireland.
Republic of Ireland is still going to be in the EU, right? Mm-hmm. So they still can ask about that. But that's where Apple's money is, and that's the way it is, and that's why they're borrowing. And it's a good deal to borrow it, because what could possibly go wrong? That's probably, those bond rates are probably pretty good.
Can you guarantee this loan? I got money in my shoe. Okay.
Yeah, really. Apple is saving, or looks to be saving, $625.6 million. A judge has voided the verdict against Apple in a patent lawsuit by VirNetX. Some might call them a patent troll. Others, merely a non-practicing entity.
So happy about this.
A.K.A. patent troll. Friday, U.S. District Judge Robert Schroeder of Tyler, Texas, where most of these lawsuits occur, East Texas, said it was unfair to Apple that the lawsuits had been combined into a single trial. Jurors may have been confused. So he has now ordered both cases retried. So it ain't over yet, and it's still in Tyler, Texas. But at least they don't have to write a check today.
I wonder, shouldn't we now be at a point where there's so many people who are so important at Apple just defending lawsuits that, just like the original Mac, they should all as a point of pride, they should sign like the inside of the cover page of the latest amicus brief or whatever. I feel so sorry.
No, but some of them have retired. I mean, it is funny, but some of them retired over the Samsung trials. They just didn't want to be in court anymore. And I'm sure this is the same. I mean, they want to be there creating apps, and they can't create apps because they're being sued. Plus, they have to waste their time going to testify about these apps. And yeah. It's not the job they want to have. And you could say, like, Apple in Samsung, they knew what they were getting, but being sued by all these patent trolls all the time, it's not what anybody wants.
And of course, the Samsung case is going to the Supreme Court, I believe. Apple counters Samsung in Supreme Court struggle. On Friday, Apple filed a legal brief urging the Supreme Court to rule against a Samsung assertion about the damages it should pay Apple for infringing patent designs. Let me see if I can. So earlier this month, Samsung told the court that Apple should get profits only from the parts of a smartphone that infringe Apple's patents. The front face and a grid of icons in the interface, not from the entire phone. Just the profits from the face and the icons.
The part that the humans use. Okay.
But today, Apple countered by saying Samsung had no evidence to support its claim. The company also said there's no need to send the case back to a lower court. Remember, the damages were originally $1 billion, cut back a little bit by a judge. I guess we'll see what happens, right? It's going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think that Apple must be kind of happy that Samsung must be kind of happy that Scalia is not on the bench.
Well, and also that even if they lose here, that's it. It's over.
Yeah,
they can't. There's no more appeals. You can only go to God now. And that's,
they're going to the Hague.
Maybe both sides figure there's no way we can possibly lose because there's no way this continues after this.
Yeah, it's over.
I'll be out drinking that night.
It's over. Let's take a little break and we'll talk about the car, some movements in the Apple Titan project, and the 1 billionth iPhone. What? Who would have ever thought 1 billion iPhones would be sold?
I bought 2 that weekend, Leo. There's a high chance for most of mine.
Did you get a prize if you, we'll find out in a second.
Definitely not Palm.
I got my new, look at this, my new MacBreak Weekly Tracker came. This is so awesome. Tracker is really a fun thing. It lets you keep track of stuff that you lose, like your keys, the remote control, Fluffy the cat, Spot the dog. They're small enough, these little anodized Tracker Bravos. They're about the size of a quarter, and they can easily fit on a dog collar. In fact, if you want to put it in your dog, they have a waterproof enclosure you can put it in. And now you can get custom printed images. Look, MacBreak Weekly, I've got one that's my face. Actually, a picture of the dog would be kind of cool on there, too. So what is this? Well, you pair it to your phone, right? The Tracker app on your phone. And now you get two-way separation alerts. If you lose your, let's say it's on your keys, as mine is, and you lose your keys. Then you can say, where are my keys? And you can look on the Tracker app on your phone and see a map, and there's where you left your keys. But also, if you have your keys but you left your phone somewhere, you could press the button on the Tracker and your phone screams, or whatever sound you tell. Even when it's silenced, your phone will say, I'm here, come get me. You can track up to 10 devices at once. Now, it is Bluetooth LE. Now, that's a good thing because it means you're going to get a year battery life, and the battery is replaceable in this. But you might say, what if I get more than 100 feet away from my keys? Well, that's when the amazing Tracker Crowd GPS comes in. It's the largest crowd GPS network in the world. Every, you know, more than 1.5 million people have the Tracker app running on their phone. If they stroll by your keys, the Tracker goes, help me, help me. And the phone goes, oh, I see Leo's keys, and sends the My Tracker app the message, your keys were last seen right here. So this is a way. Those are all those blue dots. Those are all trackers, 1.5 million of them. A great way to keep track of where your device is everywhere. You can add a laser engraved message as well as getting a custom image print on this thing, which is really, really nice. Tracker also just introduced the Tracker Atlas, which works not only with trackers but all Bluetooth trackers to pinpoint your item on a customizable floor plan of your house. So now you not only know it's in your house, you know which seat cushion it's behind. You just ask where the Tracker Atlas, where your item is, and you get the answer. No need to search. You'll never lose a thing again. In fact, the hardest thing you'll ever have to find is their website, thetracker.com. You see the missing E? thetracker, the track, R.com. And if you want a good deal, just use the offer code MacBreak. You get 30% off your entire order. So get some custom printing and all that stuff. Get just load up on them and get 30% off with the offer code MacBreak. TheTracker.com, promo code MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support and for helping me not lose my keys. I haven't lost my keys since I have had the Tracker on them. It's very, very nice. How many products in tech have sold 1 billion items? It took the computer industry 25 years to ship the billionth PC. Android has passed 1 billion devices, but not just one manufacturer.
It's one manufacturer part that's impressive.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, really impressive.
Diodes.
You know what's cool? 1 billion iPhones. And I think this is kind of cool also. Steven Sinofsky, the guy behind Windows 8, former Microsoft employee, tweeted, getting to 1 billion cumulative, the iPhone 9.1 years, the PC 20 years, Android 4.5 years. McDonald's took 23 years to get to 1 billion hamburgers. Facebook took 8.7 years to get to 1 billion users.
Well, and also I think that the Facebook and McDonald's are an equal thing. But when you talk about the personal computer, these are different manufacturers with different backgrounds, right, and so on and so forth. So, you know, the iPhone is, I think, very different than the PC.
And it costs a lot more than a Big Mac.
And if you combine iPhone and Android, it's 2 billion really fast.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I mean, the world has changed because of portable computer, pocket computers.
Yeah.
Everybody has.
I think that's the impressive stat. If you look at computers versus handsets are just obliterating everything.
Yeah.
Well, and you really think about the timing of things, you know, whether things were really ready to happen. I mean, obviously the Newton was out there and it could have done the same thing over time, but it just the technology wasn't there, the infrastructure or the ecosystem wasn't ready for that kind of screen at that time. So it really also is, timing is everything.
If you, and you can tell this is true because it's from Wolfram Alpha, stacked all the iPhones flat,
it would take you to the moon.
It would
Mr.
take
Wolfram
you.
Did this personally? You can believe it.
Did he really? Did Steven do this? No, I don't know. It sold enough iPhones, if stacked flat, they would go from the Earth to the ISS 9 times. I don't know why they picked the ISS.
Yeah, but the question is, when they say 9 times, are they calculating the different width of each iPhone?
No, they're averaging 7.5 millimeters.
Okay,
so times but a billion
sales amounts. So it would be, you know, I think that the accuracy is
it's fudgy math.
I guess I could turn it into the moon by just changing this calculation here. It wouldn't be so hard. It doesn't go probably to the moon. That's why.
Or back. Maybe you can get
not
the
even close.
Back yet.
Mm. And besides, no, if you had a stack of iPhones going to the moon, what would keep them from falling over?
You and your
well,
physics.
There's
you and your physics
gravity,
support.
Of course.
It's going to be perfectly. Yeah.
So we heard from Ev Leaks, who is, as you mentioned last week, notorious more for Android leaks than iPhone leaks, that we were going to be able to get our iPhone 7 or whatever they call it by September 16th. He's now saying pre-orders could begin on the 9th. Confirmed, Ev Leaks tweets. Pre-orders start on the 9th. You can extrapolate the launch event from there.
I mean, Evan deserves all the credit in the world for his previous leaks, but it's only confirmed when Apple announces it because it's July. Yeah. And while there's a rough plan for this, things change. We saw that last year when there was a 3-week instead of a 2-week gap between delivery and event. So
I don't even think this is credible because what pre-orders typically are the Friday after the announcement.
Right? For the last couple of years, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I have to say, go ahead.
Sorry. 9/8/7/6. That means that the announcement is September, like the day after Labor Day.
The event is usually more often than not the Tuesday, and they become available either, like not that Friday, but the Friday after. Although last year it was two Fridays after.
Well, this is not then. Then you'd have to announce it at the end of this month to make that work. Because the 9th, you'd have to go back to August 31st. I don't know. Who cares? Any credible rumors? Are they going to remove the headphone jack? Really? Come on, really?
Starting to look like at least one device in the line will not have a headphone jack. The gravity has now shifted such that I will be more surprised if I do not see at least one phone that does not have a headphone jack on it,
And if Apple does two phones, one with and one without, are they going to use that as a referendum for the headphone jack?
Well, it'll be more complicated than that because do you want the big fancy camera, but then you don't have the... I mean, Apple choices are never, never easy. It's like, I really want the fancy camera, but I kind of like the headphone jack, but I have to pick one of these two things.
Yeah, I mean, look, compare that to, again, back to the Galaxy Note. The difference between the Galaxy Note 7 and the Galaxy Edge 7 is pretty much nil. Has the same memory, same CPU, same camera front and back. There's that extra scanner, but pretty much you can just choose, do I want a larger phone or a smaller phone? Do I want a stylus? Do I not have a stylus? And that's your decision. You're not forced to, if you want optical image stabilization, you don't have to go for the larger device just to get that. I hope that if they do go for that route, they will do it the way that they did the MacBook Nothing, which is that we're just going to simply add a phone to the line that does not have this feature because we think that that's going to be the future. But we acknowledge that if we just simply cast everybody adrift at once, that's when people start realizing they can buy great Android phones for $450, and we don't want to make people do that.
But if you want this future thinking phone, you know, with this fancy camera and all these other bells and whistles, and maybe you're the person who's ready for wireless.
Right, exactly. I think especially in the Apple world, there are a lot of people that are willing to, they're early believers more than early adopters, where they're saying that, you know what, this is the right attitude. And I kind of like the idea of being the first people who don't have headphone jacks in our phones, and they'll get over it very, very quickly.
Do most people use wireless headphones?
No.
I'll say this,
that for the past 6 months, I have been paying super, super close attention to how people using phones in public. I'm always one of those snoops on the subway car or in an office or on a college that's trying to get a look at what kind of computer are you using, how are you using it. And I was specifically trying to figure out, has there been this exodus away from wired headphones that I haven't seen yet? And two or three weeks ago, I was in Boston, almost specifically there 5 hours early before a dinner date, just to hang out at public areas and look. And I was seeing, I think I saw three wireless headphones until about 5 p.m. Compared to, I think I stopped counting wired headphones at 100 and something. And the only time I started seeing any volume was when I was intentionally in the financial district, positioning myself at the place between where everybody leaves their offices and runs to South Station to get their trains home. Then I saw maybe another dozen compared to so many wired headphones I couldn't count.
Well, I'm
absolutely convinced that if anybody thinks that there is wired headphones are not what people are using and people don't rely on them and they're on their way out, they've got to come up with better data than that.
Well, I think that Apple has to make this work, if they're really going to push wireless and not a lightning-based headphone system, which I think the lightning-based one is probably more likely as far as, they'll have that available. Yep. If they're going to go wireless, I think that Apple is going to have to, they're going to have to release a better version of Bluetooth, a bunch of partners to do that. There are more, refined versions of Bluetooth than what's out there right now. No, I mean, I'm saying that there is Bluetooth that Apple's not using right now.
Yeah, there's A2DP, which is stereo, but there's a higher quality Bluetooth that's not
We use a Bluetooth with some of our wireless transceivers that goes a lot farther. It is a lot more powerful. Yeah. It is a lot more reliable, and that's not being used in the headsets right now.
Well, you have to buy new headphones just for that, though, right? I mean,
you might need to, but I think that's the argument that Apple's going to have to make, because the reason no one's using the wireless is because of all the clicking, all the breakup, all the You know, all of us got to wireless. I've probably bought 5 or 6 wireless headsets thinking this is going to be the one that works, and it never does, you know. And so, you know, a reliable, I mean, I would love to go wireless if I felt like it was going to work as well as wired. And it just, they've never solved
those
that
new
problem.
Bose, though. You can't separate her from those. And new Bose wireless?
The QC7s, are they?
Yeah. QC somethings, yeah.
You know, it's funny because I interviewed yesterday David Hennemeyer Hansen, the creator of Ruby on Rails. And I don't know how we got on this subject, but we were talking about this. And he said, this is great. Everybody should go to wireless headphones. He says, once I started using those Bose headphones, I never looked back. I think of all the years I spent untangling headphone wires. He said, you got to do this. This is the future. It's what happened with CDs. It's what's happened with floppies. This is the future. Here's a video, by the way, and I don't know. This is another one of those weird leak videos of what purports to be. I don't even know what language this is. I think
it's Vietnamese.
Yeah. It purports to be the new headphone, lightning headphone adapter. It's short, just a couple of inches, and has lightning on one end, of course, and a mini jack on the other. I don't know why he's taking
it. So I accidentally don't use it.
This is a simulation of what the iPhone 7 looks like.
Yeah, I don't know. He's taping, over his headphone jack.
Exactly the color of the tape like might be different 7. In the shipping product.
No more headphones, and now he pulls out, apparently, this is the adapter. It does look very Apple-y. If it's a fake.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? And the rumor would be that they would ship this with whatever this new iPhone is, yes?
Have they ever put an adapter in? I can't think of a time they've ever actually included the adapter. It's usually like a $20 extra.
I just hope it ships on time.
They didn't,
I'm sorry. I was about to say with the first iPhone, they required a dongle for just to make it fit that recess, but they didn't include that. They included special headphones. I do, you know, what Alex said is something I hadn't really considered before, is let's say that there is a new Bluetooth standard that does away with most of the inconvenience of Bluetooth. And Apple can say, we are the first to adopt this industry-wide, non-proprietary standard as both a way of enhancing the user experience and also pushing this standard forward. That's a little bit of a BSE sort of thing, but you could get away with it. All I'm thinking about is, I'm not talking about clicking and buzzing. I'm not thinking about audio quality. I'm thinking about every time I go off on my bike 3 or 4 times a week, I have this little tiny, cheap little eBay Bluetooth speaker so I can listen to podcasts that's mounted to my handlebars. And 1 out of every 5 times I wind up going out for my ride without any audio whatsoever, because for some reason it would not connect. I can see it, but it's not connecting to it as an audio device. And this happens with iOS devices. It happens with Android devices. And it's just too much trouble I don't want to spend 5 minutes in my driveway debugging a problem. Whereas if I had wired headphones, you plug it in, it works. You unplug it, it stops working. You plug it in, it works again. I hope Apple doesn't screw this up.
Well, I mean, the other possibility is, of course, Apple wouldn't use necessarily an industry standard. They would use their own special standard that is going to be higher quality and easier to use, and it's easier to pair. And of course, Apple would worry about adoption, except for the fact that they own a headphone company. So you know, wouldn't hurt Apple.
And it could fall back to Bluetooth.
How much of this is because they own Beats?
That, we should make fun of them. We should be absolutely merciless and make fun of them.
Well, I think if they say it properly, that's
a company that deserves to be taken down a peg.
Yeah.
If they do it properly and they say, you know, we'd love to use Bluetooth, but we have this and this problem with it. So these use this special point-to-point Wi-Fi high band connection, and if it can't detect that, it just defaults back to Bluetooth 4.5 or 5.0, whatever they want to use for that. So it works great with everything, but it works super extra great if you have the brand new iPhone.
Very interesting to see.
Super extra great trademark.
I know we will be watching with interest on September 2nd, 9th, August 31st, or whatever day they do this. Yeah.
And I think that there's interesting, you know, like I would love to have, you know, kind of a, for a lot of productions and so on and so forth that we're doing, I'd love to have something that I just have in my ear all the time that is that is this omnipresent. I hear things, I talk, I ask it questions, I do all those other things that happens to use my phone as an interconnect, you know, for that. And I think that is a possible future that Apple is kind of going down. I think a lot of people are going down. We now have in-ear translation tools. We have, you know, things that are connected to searches, all of those things. I think this kind of augmented, we talk about augmented reality with our eyes, but I think an augmented reality where you have hearing aids that are essentially providing a lot of extra data, I think is probably not that far away. And this could be something, it may not be what they're announcing in September, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the direction that they're going to.
I can listen to my iPhone on my hearing aids, my Starkey Halos. The problem is hearing aids audio quality is terrible because it's just designed to amplify voice. So it's not full spectrum by any means. And really, they favor hiddenness over quality. So this really tiny little speaker that comes back to the part in the behind your ear.
Rich Stevens had a great comic on iMore today where he was saying, I can't take people talking about this headphone jack anymore. And they're saying, what are you complaining about now? And you just see everybody using their iPhone with the speaker up because they don't have headphones that will work with it anymore. So they're just walking around listening to all their podcasts and Amazon books.
I totally could see that happening.
There was a funny Joya Tech a couple months ago. I don't think it was a Diesel Suite. I think it was a Joya Tech. Where she said there was some sort of consumer complaint about a feature that the iPhone doesn't have. And said, well, this is what the iPhone would look like if it had everything that all the users wanted. And it says it's got a microfiche reader and it's got a satellite link to this. If I had any talent for drawing, I would have put a response cartoon. Like, here is what the iPhone 7 would look like if Apple had to compete with other people making iOS devices and would just be like an iPhone, then one arrow saying, a damn headphone jack.
Wouldn't that be
Homer Simpson's car?
Yeah. Well, maybe the time will come when it'll be nostalgic.
Well, you know, and I still think of Andy when we talk about this because Andy was so adamant that we were going to be upset about the Ethernet cable being taken out of our laptops, and he was right. I mean, I have to use that all the time, and I'm always like, oh, right.
Yeah, you were the one who really railed against that. You're one of the few.
We're not going to need an Ethernet jack.
One of the few, yeah.
It was specifically because it wasn't like the MacBook Air where they made it so thin that you couldn't credibly put one in there and so you're getting something in return for it. It was you basically made the MacBook Pro maybe 1 millimeter too thin to accept an Ethernet jack.
And even then, the Pixel has this little foldy one that you can use that is the same thickness.
It's okay to take a feature away, but I think that you need to explain to me how that is a consumer positive feature. What you're taking something from me? What are you giving me in return? And if it's not something that's important to me, and you have taken away something that defines for me the convenience of your product, you run a really big risk that I'm not going to buy the next version of your product.
Oh, and the problem is that it is what do 90% of people use 90% of the time? 90% of people that we know don't even I work in offices now. We go to do productions in offices that. I'm like, do we have a hardline connection there? What's a hardline connection?
Nobody even knows.
Open our computers and we're connected to the internet. And so it can be very, literally there won't be one in the whole office anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Let's see. Project Titan has a new...
Big Bob is back, baby.
New leader, Bob Mansfield. He's found something he wants to do. Although the rumors now are that maybe Apple is not going to build a car... But build the software instead.
Yeah. These are really weirdly reported stories.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. I mean, it's just a rumor.
I think that would be very difficult.
So, a couple of things with this. One is that Mansfield did step back from his role as head of hardware engineering at Apple, and he was replaced by Dan Riccio, and then Johnny Cerugi sort of split off the platform technologies group, which does all the silicon and all the internal stuff. But Bob has been around. If you talk to people at Apple, they see him. He's not been a stranger, and he's been working. He helped work on the Apple Watch. So he's by no means stepped away from Apple, is now stepping back. The big thing here is that Apple tends to put a senior vice president in charge of everything. Jeff Williams is technically in charge of the Apple Watch, but there's a lot of other people, including Johnny Ive, very involved in that project. And Dan Riccio was in charge of Apple Car, but he's also in charge of every iPhone, every iPad, every Mac. And putting Bob Mansfield there is you have somebody who very literally is a legend in his field. He launched the iMac, the iPhone, the iPad, and you're making this his one job. And I think that is just a huge win for everybody, because it means that Riccio can focus on all the other products he's already shipping. Mansfield has a singular focus, which is Project Titan, and everybody there gets the benefit of his enormous experience. And, you know, it's always involved self-driving software. It's just the degree of which it's self-driving and when that's the issue, because as we know, self-driving is great until anything unanticipated, like maybe a snowstorm happens. And then, you know, you've got to sort of understand what self-driving really means. And also, it's so far out that there's a lot of time for Apple to sort of explore this space. And it's what they're doing in the meantime, how they're doing everything from the software stack up, that I think is super important.
Yeah, it's a really interesting the thing is, everyone assumes self-driving car, but in truth, you're talking about situations where you can create whatever business you want to right now. It's not even necessarily, I think it would be a very smart thing to try to work on the software that can become part of a standard that every modern car in the next 20 years is going to be based upon. But it could also be something as simple as, we are going to work on the software that a government or a city would buy in order to coordinate traffic and observe traffic and figure out how to route traffic through cities, or even analytical software that can take real-time data and figure out, this is the next bridge that needs to be fixed, this is the next road that should be improved, or this is where we should probably be considering adding more capacity to our transit system. There's a smart cities initiative from the Department of Transportation that's getting a lot of traction. There's so much you could do by just putting lots of sensors on the road and then figuring out what those sensors are telling you. So there's, just because a company is putting billions of dollars into automotive stuff and transportation doesn't necessarily mean they're building a car. It could be that they are thinking a little bit more abstract and therefore really looking for a situation where they can basically get 8 cents out of every dollar that's being spent by every government and every consumer for the next 20 years.
Yeah, my thing has been, look at the Apple post iPhone and everything we've gotten, the focus on security, on privacy, we've gotten sandboxing. And no matter how you feel about them, there's been several, the iPhone has greatly influenced how Apple perceives a computer, and that's propagated across their entire lineup. And that was a product that was built under lockdown inside Infinite Loop. And now you have this product that's being done across town, and that has 5 or 6 years of incubation ahead of it, or whatever the timeline is, 3, 5, whatever the timeline is. And how will that affect Apple for the next 10 years? And that, you know, that's a big question, because the Mac was certainly 10 years. The iPhone is probably going to be 10 years. There's got to be something that picks that up next. And I think this is a huge opportunity, if they take it, sort of figure out what Apple culture and technology will be for the next decade.
They just hired Dan Dodge from BlackBerry. He was the guy, CEO at QNX, with a real-time operating system. And this is also going to be about the car, right?
So many infotainment systems. I mean, when you do early Android Auto and CarPlay, that was all living on top of QNX, and QNX was super agile in getting that deployed, and nuclear submarines, power plants. It's just that is what a lot of the stuff has been built on, and there's a huge amount of expertise in Apple. I mean, it's no secret that BlackBerry is not who they used to be, so there's a lot of really talented embedded systems engineers out there that are looking to do great things.
Yeah, I'd be pretty excited if this represented not Apple making another luxury consumer product that looks really cool, but if it really, it would be a sign of their next level of maturity, that they are now moving into something that is completely abstract, software that consumers don't even touch, but nonetheless, that will improve consumers' lives greatly. I think Apple's goal could be, or maybe even should be, we want to make sure that in 10 years' time, we are not just simply a maker of phones or a maker of cool hardware devices. I think they're smart enough to realize that there is a long, long list of companies that basically got their lunch eaten because they were reliant on the hardware bits that they make that are really insanely popular being insanely popular for the next 10 years. Yeah. There are a lot of severed heads on a lot of pikes on that road. I mean, there's a time where if you thought that, will Nokia ever be on the ropes? No, never. BlackBerry, oh, for heaven's sakes. There are actually songs about people using their BlackBerry. Like, no. So if they were able to have that sort of diversity, not the sort of thing that distracts their attention, because there will always be, I think, by nature, a very focused company. But if their vision were to expand to say that we're not necessarily going to be a producer of things that have chamfered edges and a Gorilla Glass version 8 on it, that we can basically change the world and improve people's lives just by pushing electrons around, I think that would be a really great move for the company.
I must be getting old, because it just doesn't feel like the Apple I knew. The Apple I knew was a computer company. Oh, by the way, and good article, Renee, on where are the new Apple computers. I've got the answer. The new Apple computer is here.
Just when you think you know what a computer is, you see a keyboard that can just get out of the way. And a screen you can touch.
I like this commercial a lot.
And even write on.
If they're just telling the story of iPad again, I'll be super happy.
Yeah.
It might just make you wonder, hey, what else can it do?
Imagine what your computer could do if your computer were an iPad. Were an iPad Pro.
I think the thing with this, though, is that they control the whole stack here. So the iPad Pro, there were some different timing in getting it to market, and the smaller one came out after the big one. But they're relatively in charge of their own destiny there, where with the Macs, there's so many other companies involved that it can fall apart a lot faster.
Does it mean that they want you to think of the iPad as a Macintosh computer and forget those other silly computers?
No.
They still make Macs? You promise me?
They want to think of it as a computer.
It's not a computer, not their computer, not the computer.
There's still my iPad Pro is my out of the office computer, and it's almost 100% of the time. And I still run into a lot of people who are surprised I'm using an iPad as a computer, because their own internal definition of an iPad is that it's one of them book reading website thinging devices, as opposed to no, I run real software on it. I get a full day's work done on it. So I like the way that that ad is positioned, not boldly saying, oh, we've created a brand new revolution in personal computing. They're saying, why don't you think about what a computer is. Exactly. Yeah. Think about what you do with it. Think maybe you realize that if you're spending $1,000 on a tablet, it doesn't necessarily have to run an operating system that you recognize that this is. We were talking about this just earlier today about how hardware really isn't hardware. Hardware is the apps and the services that you run on it. And now there's so many services, even Microsoft Office, that have abstracted themselves to run on pretty much any device you care to run it on, that you have so many options now. If I were precious about these things, I could basically do a whole day's work on a phone screen today. But I like to be able to watch Hulu. And
I'm an old man. I'm going to go down and go to my grave with a buckling keyboard and a 40-inch monitor and a quad-core processor and 32 gigs of RAM.
If there was no Sierra this year, Leo, then you could start being assertive about the Mac. But as long as Apple is contributing, like their resources are scarce, and they would move people off that project so fast. So next year, if there's no, OS 10, 10.13 or whatever.
Well, they're not going to do that till they're really ready to pull the trigger. It doesn't mean that they're not planning on pulling the trigger.
Yeah. I think OS 11, they're merged. I think that the direction that we're we'll see how it goes. But I think that that's the direction that this is definitely going. And I see myself. I mean, even when we look at how we use the computer, I still use my laptop probably the most. But I see more and more of the stuff that I do either something I'll do on my iPad or something that I want computers that neither my Mac Pro or my laptop fulfill on. A lot of our stuff, our heavy duty stuff is all moving to Linux because I need multiple GPUs and, lots of other things. And so, and I don't have any expectation that Apple is going to do any heavy lifting, so I think that we're going to continue to see that merger. And I think that it makes sense from a business perspective. I think a lot of us will feel bad when it happens.
I just made a Linux MacBook. I took the, I didn't use a MacBook. I used the HP, that really thin HP Elite. And put Linux on it, and it's about the perfect. It's like a MacBook, but not with OS 10 on it. And I feel like Apple doesn't want to be in that business particularly.
Well, look at how they're doing things now. Like they previously just bought Next, and that was their solution for going the next 10 years forward. And now they're swapping things out. They're not doing, we're going to rip and replace. We're going to get a whole new system. It's Swift, and Swift runs on iOS and OS 10. And now it's Apple File System, and that's going to work great on Macs, and it's going to work great. So I think it'll be a hybrid, at least until they do make the next big jump. And they're going to have
And then ARM, and we talked about ARM last time. ARM is next part of this move too, right?
But I think they're firmly committed to having different presentation layers. Like whether the underlying things become very close, 99.9% the same DNA, they still seem very adamant that the needs of someone using a traditional computer are slightly different and deserve service in that area.
I agree 100% with Renee. That's absolutely how I feel about it. I think that I can afford to have a $2,000 notebook and a $1,000 tablet that can do my work for me. Most people, they have, if they're lucky, they got $500 or $600 for a notebook that they might have to share with a family member. And so I don't think it's going to be practical to move everybody towards a system that is not good keyboard attached to a good screen and a really good internet connection that could run sort of real apps. However, I think that Apple's plan, the more they announce at every WWDC, the more I think that their plan is not necessarily to merge the two platforms, but to keep stealing good ideas from each one of them. So that's why we see that the next version of macOS has a lot of iOS features like picture-in-picture. That here's the way that it's going to deal with video, pretty much the same way that we can deal with it in iOS. Here's how iOS handled having multiple apps on the screen at one time. It's similar to having the way that the macOS can manage multiple windows automatically by basically putting them into tiles. I think there's, and as Renee said, it's not an accident that they chose to have one file system and a similar security layer that's going to work on everything with an Apple logo on it from now on. It's not necessarily because they want one operating system for everything, but they want to make sure that I think it was designed to manipulate people like me into doing the things that I'm actually doing, which is to say that if you have a nice desktop computer, why not consider having a Mac Mini as your laptop instead of buying, if you don't have $1,000 to spend, or excuse me, $1,300 to spend on a MacBook or a MacBook Air, why don't you consider buying a $500 iPad Mini instead? Because it'll be a consistent experience. You'll find that you'll have file compatibility from one to another, and you'll all be in the family, and you'll find that it works in a very, very comfortable way. I don't necessarily think that there's one way that works better than the other, because the time that I spent with the latest Microsoft Surface Pro got me thinking that, geez, if this ran macOS, this would no question be my next laptop, because I think it works exceptionally well. But I think that Apple is pursuing that in a way that it doesn't feel like they're being left behind. It just feels like they have a different point of view on making sure that you have the right device for the right person.
Well, and I think also it's generational. I think that, my kids have iPads. I would never give them a laptop. I was just like, never give them a computer or a laptop. I mean, they're coding, they're doing all kinds of stuff. They're typing away. They're doing all those things on their iPad. They don't feel like there's anything missing other than when they go to my laptop, right, they touch my screen and
they're
doesn't do anything.
They're still very young. Wait till they're in ninth grade and tell me that.
Okay. Yeah. I think by the time they're ninth grade, they would never. I mean, unless they get really geeky and decide to build stuff and want to tie it in. But even then, I think they're going to have interfaces. I think by the time they're ninth grade, we're not going to be having a conversation about computers.
But that's an excellent point. A lot of people, including people at Apple, consistently point out how we've tried having touchscreens on Macs and people don't like having to do this with their hands all the time.
That is crazy talk.
I'm sure that they have video and they have test results, but nonetheless, people are doing this all the time because it's second nature. They're expecting if they've been using their phone for 3 or 4 hours, I do it too. Like, I'm on my iPad, I come home, I unpack, I come here to my desk, and I'm just reaching out to touch something on my screen. I actually use my iPad Pro. I am using it on the sofa all the time. I have a little easel that I have on my lap to keep it up at the right angle. And I don't think anything about spending like 3 or 4 hours like actually doing email on this thing. And so I feel as though if you don't watch how people are using their machines, you miss out on some wonderful lessons on what people are actually wanting from these things.
Yeah. The thing that is pulling me more and more to my iPad is Slack, because people Slack me pictures that I want to annotate. And so I want to annotate it. And then I'm like, and I close my laptop and I open up my iPad, open it up, jump into something, draw on it. Like, this is what I want and don't want. And then send it back to them over it. And I'm just like, it's way easier to do that on my iPad than it is on my laptop. And that is not having a touch screen. I'll buy a couple more, but I'm frustrated every time an app. A MacBook comes out without a touchscreen.
I'll say this. I am actually more excited about the range of Chromebooks touchscreen Chromebooks that are becoming they're coming out the next 3 months that are designed to run to work really well when they when the Google Play Store is available for Chromebooks than I am about the next MacBook. So I'm not expecting anything particularly revolutionary or particularly epoch changing about the new MacBook, but the idea of having a $300 notebook that is credibly can handle everything that you would want a notebook for, and it's not a piece of junk that you're going to throw away after 6 or 7 months. That's a huge deal. I'm really excited by that prospect.
I guess I can acknowledge that I'm just purely nostalgic for desktop computing. And
well, there's still things that are easier. I mean, you know, the Photoshop experience. There's a lot of great photo apps out there, but the Photoshop experience is not the same.
Most people nowadays, everything they want to do, this is another thing we were talking about with David Heinemeier Hansen yesterday on triangulation, they do in the browser. And really, if you have a browser, for most people, that's all you need.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think, yeah, you're probably right, Andy, that, you know, the majority of people who aren't writing computer software, they're not doing photo and video editing. A tablet's fine. That's all I need.
Yeah. And also, it's not just the sophistication of iOS. It's that now we have developers who this isn't their first time at the rodeo. This is they've now had years of experience in thinking in terms of how to build a tablet app. I'm so in love with Adobe Lightroom, Photoshop Lightroom for the iPad Pro, so much so that I was a guy who would spend hours and hours and hours just on the desktop doing all my collecting photos and doing. And now it's like I feel as though I really want to see. I want to hold like an 8x10 color glossy picture of this photo. Do all my selections. Yeah. I can do most of the adjustments that I want to do there. And then at the last minute before I publish something, I just basically walk over to this machine. It's all been synced. And I can do some
tweaks to it. Adobe's really on the right track because they have desktop Lightroom and they have tablet Lightroom. They interoperate. You have the same stuff on both.
And they're different. They're different apps for these different platforms. It really takes advantage of what you can do with an iPad Pro.
And you're right.
Behance sounds like Beyonce. I mean, their marketing is just on point.
Yeah. Well. I will not throw
shade at Queen Bee, Renee. Mm-hmm. She is an American.
I'm not. I'm throwing it at Behance, which is still my least favorite cloud service name.
But the Lightroom is a perfect example, I think. You're right, of where you can use the strengths of each platform simultaneously. Of course, you have to have a desktop and an iPad to do that.
But I think the transition
is easy. Like, you can start on the desktop, get your Adobe account, I decided my next computer is going to be an iPad Pro. And look, I can download Lightroom, I can download Photoshop, and all my stuff is still there.
Alex, do you work that way with Lightroom?
I don't. Yeah, I still do most of my photo stuff in Photoshop.
You're an old-timer.
I'm an old-timer. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Aperture, which turned out not to be the best direction long-term. And so I got really good at that, and I'm still in the process of slowly moving the entire library, you know, porting it all over and... And to be honest with you, I still just go back to Photoshop and fix things. I'm probably going to move to Lightroom by the end of this year. I'll probably have it all over there.
But every workflow can adapt to that. Programming doesn't really. You need a desktop to program.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we'll be able to program on our iPad Pros. I mean, I don't think who wants to type on glass?
Well, I guess you use a keyboard, right?
No, you use a keyboard.
I have never been in the office of someone who codes for a living and seen fewer than two screens.
You have multiple screens
and also the amount of CPU power that's required to build an app is pretty intensive. The number of collaborative apps you need, it's pretty hard. I don't think we'll ever find ourselves in a place where there is no place for a conventional, some sort of big screen, some sort of physical keyboard, some sort of pointing device interface. But it's the case of finding out to what extent are you buying a new laptop because a laptop is the perfect solution to your needs? And to what extent are you shopping for a new laptop because you always buy laptops? You never considered maybe spending the same amount of money on a tablet instead. Again, if you told me when the iPad first came out that I would have the most important device that I'm shopping for my MacBook Pro is a really good Thunderbolt dock to make sure it's so I can only plug one thing into it because it seems to be living on my desk. If you told me that when this MacBook dies out, my next purchase will probably be a Mac Mini instead of necessarily another MacBook, I would have said, you clearly don't understand what a professional journalist like myself requires. But I absolutely love, I even love the fact that I have both the 13-inch iPad and an iPad Mini. Because there's no excuse now for me to leave the house without a really good workspace that I can do stuff with. I'm so happy with my investment in Apple hardware when it comes to what the iPad does. I really think it's their most successful hardware platform right now, and I include the iPhone in that.
Well, we'll see.
Flawless victory. No responses. Yes.
It makes me a little sad, but I think I have to acknowledge that's what's going to be happening, right?
It's the same thing, because we were talking earlier about the changes we're making at iMore. It's just in recognition that the early adopters, the enthusiasts represent we're very loud, we're very vocal, we're talking first, we're talking often. But computers have become, to your earlier point, they're mainstream, they're commoditized. And what 99% of people want to do is very different. Like they're just not opening up Terminal. They are playing Pokemon. They are using docs, they're using web browsers, and they're super happy, and they need devices that fit those needs. And that's going to be where most companies make most of their money and who they target most of those devices. And we'll always have we'll always have the stuff that we like, but it's going to be very different than every one of us has brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and kids, and their needs and their devices are going to be different.
Argued for a long time that, well, Apple will always make Macs because their developers will demand it. They're the people who use desktop computers, but I could even see a world where Apple doesn't make desktop computers and developers use Linux or something in cross platform situation.
It'll probably be different than that. Is that we'll just have glass or whatever, or VR or something, like we'll have endpoints. Right. And I hate to quote Torsten Heinz, 3 or 4 years later, because it's really weird. But we'll just have these endpoints and these clouds and these little boxes, and it'll manifest the environment that we need according to where we are at the time.
It's more than just UI we're talking about, really. There's also a philosophical difference. There's no file system and no access to the file system on iOS. Do we need a file system? Probably not.
That keeps me away from the iPad for the things that I use it for. I need to be able to find stuff.
When I was using the Surface Pro as my daily driver, that's the key difference. That I will happily take that with me for an entire week without having to think ahead or without having to plan anything. Whereas with the iPad, if I'm leaving for a week and I'm taking the iPad as my only thing, my first question is, okay, let me take a look at the NAS that's in my office and make sure that everything I could possibly need is on that NAS so I can use an iOS app to get that file when I need it. The number of dongles I have to take with me for just a day to make sure that if I need to access something, I can do it is insane. Whereas with my simple little Android phone, I can simply plug in a USB-C card reader and I can see everything that's on
that
card.
It's a struggle though, right? You've added to the difficulty of doing what you're doing, it feels like to me. Well, like we're all saying, you can do it on an iPad, but it's just harder, it seems to me. Maybe not.
There's some things that are harder, but I think the key difference, if you're trying to use an iPad of any stripe as a primary computer during a trip, it comes where you have to be able to predict what you're going to need and prepare for that, especially when it comes to file I/O. For other things, however, I love the fact that I can have two apps on the screen and window management is non-existent. Just simply understands that here is the primary app I'm dealing with. Here's Scrivener. Here is Omni Outliner on the side of it. And I can go between the two very, very easily and also have a floating window that has the thing, the YouTube video that I shouldn't be watching, but I actually am. I will also say the reliability of an iOS device. macOS cannot compete with that. I know that my iPad is always just plain gonna work, whereas on the Mac, it largely comes down to what was I doing yesterday and was it something that's gonna require me to shut down and restart, just basically to whatever memory-sucking gremlin is steadily taking over the inside of my Mac like a cavity creep or something needs to be dealt with. It's super light. It's super small. I know that today, that tomorrow when I'm going to be spending the day in town, I'm just going to need to write an 800 word thing. I'm going to want to look at something I wrote over the weekend that's 4,000 words and do my editing on it. So I don't necessarily need to have 12.9 inches of display. I can have my iPad Mini for that reason and choose the right thing for the job. There are differences, but they're not really limiting differences.
What if the future of computing were, you kind of touched on this with your NAS, some sort of, each individual had some sort of centralized CPU storage unit, whether at home or in the cloud. And then you choose an appropriate set of peripherals to do the kind of work you wanted to do. I mean, one of the advantages of that, of course, is you'd have a single data set that you were working on with your phone, tablet, dressed up, whatever. And then you choose an appropriate peripheral, whether it's a augmented reality visor and swiping around, or maybe you need a keyboard. But does that make sense as kind of a future vision of computing? Because really the difference between an iPad and a desktop is more about the peripherals, about the UI and about your interaction with your data.
I think it's more about the developer understanding that your intent is probably going to be different from a predictable set of features, and therefore lets us jettison a lot of things that we know the user is probably not going to want, to making sure that the user is never set adrift. But what you described is I was doing some deep file maintenance. I came across the keynote that I wrote for the last Boston Macworld Expo, the final one. I closed the sucker down, 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, and the whole theme of it was, here's what I think should be the next versions of macOS. And one of the big ideas that I thought was natural back then is the idea of articulation, having one app that figures out the device it's on and what you're trying to do with it and rearticulates itself to fit into the mold of that. And Windows 10 is very much like that, because you can have the exact same app. Microsoft Office is not broken down in different versions of it. There is, if you're running on a big desktop with three screens, it behaves like a big desktop app. If you're running it on a small tablet, it becomes a small tablet app. If you run on a phone, it becomes a phone app.
Right.
If you're running it on HoloLens, it becomes a HoloLens
app. It's all just about changes in UI.
I think that's natural.
To a centralized data, core of data and work. And your whole life is in this thing. I mean, I've started, as you know, running a centralized server out of my house where all my data and my notes and music, everything is there. And it has a web-based interface, which means I can use it on a phone or on my iPad or on a desktop. And I think maybe if we move in that direction, and then you're right, you have not just peripherals, but apps that are not data aware so much as UI aware.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to become a bigger and bigger fan of Plex. I really
Plex is a good example, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has apps that are tailored for iOS and tailored for Android, but it also has an amazing web app that gives you pretty much everything you could possibly do with these individual apps. And it really does make me think, my God, why doesn't iTunes have some sort of a web presence so that it doesn't matter? All that matters is that there is some place, there's a pile of my music and my photos and my video somewhere where this computer can reach it. And this web page will find it, connect to it, and pipe it into this screen right here. I don't have to worry about, have I synced my data to this? Is this in the cloud, or have I downloaded it to this device?
I would love to see Apple work on this instead of a car. Apple, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a box that's really easy, that everybody has one of their own, and maybe you also do a cloud backup, so we don't want it, our data needs to be safe. And then you make peripheral devices that interface with that box in a way that's appropriate to the kind of thing you want to do, the location you're at. Maybe it's a little phone, maybe it's a pad, maybe it's a thin client with a keyboard and a screen. That, if Apple did that, I think that's more forward-looking than thinking about, oh, how can we do an automated vehicle?
Well, it's something, remember that the car is something they're looking at. And also that it's not as though if they shut this project down, all that money and all that work attention.
Well, and for all we know, they're doing that. They have enough money to do all of the above, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is one area which makes me think that if I could change one thing culturally about Apple, it would be that they could take the secrecy down from 11 down to, say, 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very useful to be able to say, here is something that we're thinking of. Here is what we're looking at. So that even if they never necessarily ship this version of iTunes that they showed off at WWDC last year, you at least know that here is where their thinking is. Here's where their attention is, as opposed to there's a total vacuum in the fact that the Finder hasn't really changed much in terms of surface features in the past 5, 6, 7 years. Does that mean that they're not engaged in improving it, or does that mean that they're planning something so big that they don't feel like they've really licked it yet? it's.
What do you think, Renee? Would you think that'd be a market that'd be interesting if it was just dead simple to use? You didn't have to worry because right now you can do it, but you have to know what you're doing. You have to set up a server. Plex is a particular thing for media, but what if you had Plex for everything, your whole life, the box, and you bought the box, you had automatic cloud backup, and then you bought the peripherals and it all. Wouldn't that be a product?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's the sort of the dream. It's what the thin client used to be when everyone was just talking about having that, you know, computer.
Yeah, but now we have enough bandwidth. Now we can do it. We can actually make it work.
Totally. It just depends who delivers a compelling solution.
Well, Apple's great at this because Apple's really good at understanding user interface factors, human factors, because it has to be dead simple because it has to be something every human would want one of. And then and then you buy all the stuff that goes, the accessories.
The pessimist would say that Apple's, you know, track record of services doesn't align them with doing this. But I think that's where you see companies like up there, you know, who've been trying for a while now to do very interesting things.
Somebody, Apple's not going to do it just because it's going to be some new. It's going to be somebody comes along and says, "Hey,
Apple has a chance because I mean they have reinvented themselves several times. Yeah. And one of the few companies who can. And I would be
classically
shocked if
hard
they were working
to do
on this. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I would be shocked if a big part of what they're doing now doesn't involve that.
Well, I think you also decide what you're storing up there. I mean, is it any file or is it your images and notes and, you know,
everything? Like it's everything.
Right.
It's everything. And the thing is, Apple can sell one box to everybody and, yeah, you upgrade it or whatever. But what you make all the money on is all of the ways you interface with that box.
And all the different boxes. Like, you might have that box and then you might have the beautiful display, the wall size one in your living room, the one in your car.
Isn't that what
we
want? We don't want 10 computers. And that's what we've got right now. We've got a pad. We got a phone. We got a desktop. We got a laptop. We got a computer at work. We don't want that anymore.
Well, I think that to a degree, I think we do. If we want to have the right tool for the job and we want our individual tools to be as flexible as possible. Like I said, I mean, if I had known a year ago what I knew now about changing my thinking about how I do the work that I do, again, I might not have replaced my MacBook back in November. Because it turns when I last year, when I knew that the iPad Pro was coming in the fall, I intentionally bought an iPad Mini because I could foresee a future, having used the 9.7-inch iPad for years, a future in which I would be using this 12.9-inch device as a primary field computer, but also have this small thing for when I'm in that mode where I'm hoping that I don't have to do any work today, but in case I get an email from my editor and I have to work today suddenly, I want to be able to do that. If I were stuck with one device that could handle it all, I'm not sure that I could really do my work. I love the fact that I live in this world in which I can and have written 800 words on this thing at a family event because a court case got handed down in the middle of a family reunion, and I felt as though I couldn't turn down a chance to talk about this to the Sun-Times readership, and I also couldn't turn down a really good excuse to not have to interface with distant relatives for 38 minutes so I could just go into a second bedroom.
Here's another reason Apple wants to do that. If you're going to do privacy, that means you have to have the user's data centralized so you can, if you want to do a really smart Siri, the Siri has access to all your data in a centralized place. So not only is your data living there in the box, but your agent, your personal agent is living in the box and has access to everything and enough power to be useful. In other words, move it away from the variety of clouds we use. I don't know. I just made this up, but I like it. I want it.
No, but I think I understand what you're saying. And I think I hope that Apple doesn't miss an opportunity that they security and privacy are super important. But if you allow for a world in which a user is willing to trust a third party with extremely sensitive data, if they're getting a really good payback in return, that's a really great thing. I think I haven't dived into it yet, but Google added a new feature to Google Keep where it will try to organize your notes for you to figure out there's a trend to the notes that you're keeping. And so as a result, kind of like with Google Now, it will surface a note when it thinks that it's going to be of the greatest use to you. That requires a large level of trust in Google not screwing you over with this. But nonetheless, this becomes what every manufacturer should fear is the long wait for a bus between two or three coworkers and someone saying, wow, why are you like, how did you make your phone do that? How do I make my phone do that? Well, this is a feature of iOS. You can't do that on Android. Really? What? Show it to me again. That's the thing that gets people to switch. What gets me to switch from one thing to another.
This is my home cloud, which completely replaces Keep. But see, I would want all of the Keep. So I've got notes. I've got tasks. I've got my music. I've got when I record ads for the radio station, I put them in this folder, and I can share that with them. It's actually not synced up, I guess, or something. It's in a different spot. But I feel like, I don't know. Alex, wouldn't that work for you too?
I think it would. I mean, I think the hard part for me when I think about the cloud is the files that I happen to use are so big that they, it's not practical.
Oh, bandwidth's going to be plentiful soon though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, some of the stuff we're doing now is generating like 6 terabytes a minute.
That's not
and
good.
And so it's
well, but that has to all be local. But another reason why you put a box in the house or the office, and they can replicate in a slow fashion, in an offline fashion.
I think that outside of some of the production things that I do, I think I would definitely want that. And I think that I think a lot of us want to figure out a way to quantize our life to some degree, and be able to grab all those things and make some sense of all the information that's coming in. And also being able to, store it. And it does have to be something that's simple, something right. that's easy to use. I think that for 90% of the people out there, I think that wouldn't be very hard. That would be images, some text files. it's really not – the average person is not generating that much. I had to move – for my wife, I had to move files over from one computer to another. And I asked her, how big are your files? And you're thinking, I'm going to have to, what kind of hard drive I'm going to get? And she's like, oh, it's pretty big. It's like 4 gigs. I was like, okay, I got that. I think I have a USB key here. I have some old USB key that somebody gave me as a promo that I think I give you your whole computer, Yeah. So anyway, I think that is, the average person is not really generating that much content, but they are not able to find it.
You're not.
I think that, being able to find it is the key.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with your picks of the week, gentlemen. Start your picks. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. You're a technically sophisticated audience. Of course you are. You wouldn't be listening to this drivel if you weren't. So, why are you still doing your home mortgage, like we're back in the pen and quill days? Bob Cratchit. Oh, I see you want a new home loan. Let me. What is your income? Rocket Mortgage is bringing the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It is fast. It is powerful, and most importantly, completely online. They're taking all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. No more stacks of old files or paperwork with Rocket Mortgage. You can easily share your bank statements, your pay stubs with a touch of a button, a touch of a finger, helping you to get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation because computers. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this not just from your computer, but from your phone or tablet on the couch. On the couch, my friends, if you're looking to refinance your mortgage, if you're looking to buy a home, stop with the Bob Cratchit. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Yeah, it's from Quicken Loans. That makes you feel better, doesn't it? They're the best. quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Thank you, Rocket Mortgage, for bringing us into the 21st century. From Quicken Loans, go to quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Your pick of the week, sir.
So my pick of the week is the new Apple TV remote app. It is a completely new app. It will not update if you have Apple's old remote app. You have to go to the App Store. You have to grab it. But when you get it, it is sort of everything that we wanted and were promised for an Apple TV remote app for the fourth generation Apple TV. And that includes all the gesture controls. There's a Siri button. So you hold down a little microphone in the bottom right, and then you speak to it the way you would the actual hardware Siri remote. The menus work. The skipping works. All the gestures work. And it really does. If you remember back when the Apple TV launched, there was no remote app that worked with it. And then we sort of got a retrofit of the old one. But this really feels like the app that should have launched alongside the Apple TV. And if you're a big Apple TV user, I cut cable several years ago now, and I use Apple TV for everything, for Netflix. I have obviously all the iTunes stuff that I've bought, and there's new things like Xiaomi in Canada and Crave TV that I've been subscribing to, and it makes it much easier to find that stuff, especially in the US where Apple has integrated the Siri search results into a lot of other apps. So it'll give you not just iTunes results, but results for a lot of the other video apps that are available on the store. And I, perfect example, I took my Apple TV with me to a bunch of meetings that I was at last week, so I could just use AirPlay, and we could all work on the same documents or look at the same presentations at the same time. And it was phenomenal, because you don't even need to be logged into the network anymore. It does peer-to-peer AirPlay, but I left the remote behind when I left the hotel. And so I have to go buy a new one, and I haven't had time to go to the Apple store yet. So I was trying to use the old app, and it was not ideal. And I loaded this up earlier yesterday when it came out, and I've just been flying, and I had time to go to the Apple store, and I just didn't. And it's just great when you can use your Apple Watch or your phone or the device you have in your hand and don't have to go searching for a physical remote. And I was watching Stranger Things on Netflix, which is a phenomenal homage to like the Steven Spielberg, John Carpenter, sort of Stephen King 1980s era of young adult science fiction stuff. And I could find the episodes. I could search for it. I could do everything I needed to do. And I'm super happy that Apple shipped this app and did it before the fall. I was in fear that we'd have to wait until the tvOS 10 update to get it. But it's available right now in the App Store.
They promised that they would update this, and they finally
have. Yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
And it's free.
Absolutely free. And again, it's a separate app. So even if you have the old app, you have to actually go to the store and get this new app.
Do you have to repair? How do you tell the Apple TV to pair to this app?
Yeah. So the app launches and it shows you the Apple TVs that it can detect within its vicinity. You tap on one of those, the TV will show you a 4-digit code on the television. You just tap that into the app and then it pairs.
Got it.
So you don't have to go to the Apple TV and go in and find. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Thank you, Renee. Alex Lindsay. Your pick of the week.
I have one that I just really like, and I've got a lot of comments on, and so I thought I'd share it. It's not exactly an Apple thing, but part of the reason I thought that it would be relevant is because I really wanted it for my watch. I thought this was going to be my next watch band, and then it just came out as a bracelet. And I know I'm buying jewelry. I know you'd never expect me to buy jewelry, but it is quite possibly the most manly bracelet ever made. So I thought I'd share it. So anyway, so. And even some of the women on our crew want it. So I'll show it to you actually on my wrist. Hold on. See, Renee, this is for, it's a bracelet. See what? So if you look at it here, this is a, what's called a Leatherman tread.
Oh, yeah. I want.
Love that.
It's a bracelet with a knife in it.
It doesn't have a knife. So it is actually, so if you look at this, it's the most manly bracelet because it actually has
tools,
And I didn't want to. I've had it for a couple of weeks, and I didn't want to say anything about it until I actually was like, am I really going to use these tools? And the answer is yes. I've used the, and basically what you do is you take it off and you hold it like this, and it becomes a handle for something like a Phillips head screwdriver. So I've used the Phillips a fair bit. It's got little Allen wrenches. I have not been able to successfully use the Allen wrenches. It's not the right size. The one I use the most is the can opener or the bottle opener on the end there. As well as there's this little one here that cuts. So this one right here, and it just slices open plastic.
Oh,
bags.
I need that. I would use that every day.
Oh my goodness! Like that's worth that's worth the price of admission. And then there's just lots of like straight head.
Can you get through an airport on that thing?
I have done it multiple times. I was just in Cleveland and Philadelphia and DC and a bunch of other places and
Do
flying around.
Do they even look
at
it?
Nope. Doesn't even show up on the radar.
I think it's a
I take it off bracelet. And it's coiled up. It's just coiled up in my leather or my Scotty vest or whatever. So I have the bracelet.
No, you wouldn't be able to wear it. You wouldn't get
it. But it hasn't raised any issues at all so far. I didn't try to take. I obviously in the last couple of weeks I was in enhanced security. I didn't try to take it through there. I didn't try to do that. But I from airport security anyway, it was fine. And so, but the It's great. It's comfy. The only thing, if you have a small wrist, fortunately, my wrist is fairly large. If you have a small wrist, you have to decide what tool you're giving up to, you know, to make it smaller. So it's like I had to give up like one section. I was like, oh, do I give this up or that up? And so that's the only – and the only other thing is you want it to be kind of loose, because otherwise if it's tight, typing on your keyboard is a little – you know, with the on the Mac, it's just at the right place. So if you let it slide back a little bit, it's fine. And you get a lot of comments on it. I was kind of surprised. I don't wear a lot of jewelry, so I don't expect to. But everyone was asking, so what is that? And then you're able to say it's.
I mean,
it's
it looks like a bracelet, but it looks like there's something else going on.
It looks like a really gnarly bracelet that turns
Mad
out to be
Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome. Kind of.
It looks like you're expecting a fight somewhere. You're not hoping for one, but you're expecting one.
Exactly.
Wow. $220 bucks.
Ordering it now.
I think it's less on Amazon. I don't think it's that. I don't remember paying
that's the
that
list
much.
Price. I think Leather that's the Man. List price.
I think they actually don't they actually make a version of that with watch band lugs?
Yes.
Do they? Because I didn't see it.
I believe they, not for the Apple Watch, but for watches in general, I believe they have a version.
Wow. Yeah. So I didn't, of course, then I'd have to give up. I don't know what I'd give up. But anyway, but yeah, the probably some Allen wrenches, because they haven't turned out to be that useful. But the but I've used it for lots of things, just prying things open and working. It's just so many times when you now have it right at the tip of your, like right available. And you didn't forget to put it in your pocket or anything else. Anyway, so I like it a lot.
From Leatherman, it's called the Tread. And you can have one on your bracelet, on your wrist today.
I bet you can actually get a car out of a snowbank if you flatten that and threw that underneath one of the wheels.
It looks like it, doesn't it? It looks like snow chains. Yes. A third of an Alex, my friends. REI is selling it for $165. So there you go.
See, it's a fair bit less. Yeah, I got it on Amazon. So it's
yeah. Andy Inoko, your pick of the week.
Since the first day when comic strips were available on the web, I have begun every day by dragging my MacBook Pro off my nightstand or my iPad Pro off the nightstand into the bed and reading the morning comics. Before anything else happens, I read the comics. I finally, after many years, bought myself a pro subscription to gocomics.com. This is the official site of, I think, Andrews McMeel Publishing. And it goes to show you that if there's something you didn't like the first time you checked it out, but that was a couple years ago, you should probably check it out again. When they first started up, they had mostly their own comic strips, and they weren't necessarily ones that I really liked. And now, since last time I looked, they've got all kinds of independent comics. They've got pretty much every comic that's a professional
Calvin
comic.
Hobbs, Garfield, Doonesbury, Peanuts.
Right. And it costs nothing. If you want to see the comics that they have dozens and dozens and dozens. It costs nothing to go to gocomics.com and just look at comics. If you give them one stinking dollar per month, which you have to pay in advance, 12 stinking dollars.
Is that all it is? Year, though,
it's actually $11.88 per year.
Wow.
But let's call it a dollar a month. It will actually go even better, where you can select all the comics that you read. When you go to gocomics.com, it will actually put it all into one web page. So you basically just scroll and you see all of your comics in one page. It will only show you the comics that have been updated. If that hasn't been updated since your last visit, they'll just be a little link saying, okay, this comic has not been updated. So you know what's what.
And these are your classic newspaper comics, basically.
Mostly, but there are a bunch of comics I was surprised to find there. I really, really love. Oh God, why am I blanking on her name? There's a comic that I. Sorry about this. I feel as though I cannot move forward until.
But you can. It looks like you can read these for the most part without paying for them.
You can read them without paying for them, but you have to like click on these one
at a time.
You don't get it all in one page where it's just all preloaded.
They have editorial
for you.
Cartoons. So these are the syndicators that sell them to your local newspaper. You get Dear Abby, puzzles.
Right. I imagine that there have been some changes where they no longer have to have an absolute exclusive on everything you do. They have the brand new version of Bloom County.
Yeah, the 2016 version. Yeah.
They have Jane's World, which is something that I've been really digging for quite a while. I will.
Phoebe and her unicorn. Tank McNamara, Nancy.
they also have a lot of duds here. But if you go to gocomics.com features, it will show you this again. Four columns high, long. Just scrolling all the way. They have. I don't think they have.
But I'm really disappointed, though, to see that the comments on these are as bad as they are on YouTube.
Yeah.
Why have comments? Here's one from Nancy. No more beach. All we have is this crummy pool. And he says, the struggle is real. And somebody comments, so you're not happy because you can't have a trip to the beach? Think about what you have and be happy. You just said that 2 days ago.
It's a good thing they don't have Funky Winker Bean.
Because
if you go, the comments on that one at the strip where I find it are really, really funky. Connie to the Wani by Connie's son. One of the I had no idea it was on. She was on Go Comics. She was on one of those. I've subscribed to her off of her website via RSS. Some of the most beautifully written, beautifully painted strip. She works in education somewhere in New York City, but time and time again, Connie's son, when I see one of her strips, it's like I want to buy a print of that and put it someplace where I can see it every day, and it will help me out on days when it's very, very hard to move forward and very hard to have focus. Because just some of the it just really shows you how good comic strips can be. These topics that you wouldn't be able to consider this as a format until you see it, and then it's just day after day after day. I just love this strip. But that's a good example of the sort of stuff where I didn't realize it was going to be available on Go Comics. I'm used to, okay, so Steve Roper and Mike Nomad, and here's the Lockhorns, and not a whole lot of stuff that I was interested in. That was like 3 years ago. And now really most of the strips that I like. But it really is the idea that I can just click on one link and boom, there's everything. They do have an iOS app, but I don't think it's as nice. It has the simple problem where the interface tells me that I can move to the next strip by simply swiping to the left and we'll move to the next one. It is never that. I have to look for a button at the bottom and click it and then click that for next. And that's the only reason why I don't use the iOS app. But again, I had the same reaction as you. For one stinking dollar a month, okay, I can do a dollar a month. If it were five, I'd have to maybe think about it because now we're talking burrito money. But for a buck a month, easy.
Yeah. Boy, this and Craigslist, who needs a newspaper? It's all over, folks. Sell your newspaper stock.
Shut up.
Dude. You're going to really want what I've got. This is my pick of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, the next time you play Pokemon Go, you're going to want to carry your Pokemon in a Pokemon Pokeball backpack.
Oh, man.
Oh, isn't
that
nice?
Leo Laporte is still
a
hip
new
with
level
them.
Of geekdom.
This isn't mine. I stole it from Michael. But he wears it around, which is amazing considering he's an eighth grader and cool is very important to him. At first, he said, no, I'm never wearing that. But it's kind of awesome when you're going out pokey hunting and you're wearing the Pokeball backpack. It's soft, not hard. I thought at first when I looked at the ad, is that hard plastic? No, it's comfy, soft plastic.
It'd be a pokey shield.
All people will think you're Captain America.
It's the best backpack ever. And
if you fall down, you can get back up again because it's soft.
It's very soft. It's padded. I'm not much for capacity, but it's got you could
fit an Eevee and a Pikachu in there.
Easy.
You could carry it looks like a medium pizza with as many toppings as you want.
Your iPad and MacBook. Anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this edition of Back Break Weekly. I'm so glad you were here today. Renee Ritchie can be found at imore.com. They do a lot of good podcasts, too, including Debug and your new one, which is called
Apple Talk.
Apple Talk. I should.
Yes.
That's like the best name for a podcast ever. I should remember.
Trinity Caldwell, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Awesome. And you can find that if you go to imore.com and click the hamburger and you'll see podcasts in the menu there.
Or you can just go to imore.com/apple-talk.
Right there. Or if you can remember that, do that.
Yes.
Thank you, Renee.
Helio.
Great to see you as always. Alex Lindsay is a force of nature unto his own darn self. You could go to pixelcore.com, but really the best thing to do would be to follow him on Twitter, Alex Lindsay with an A, LINDSAY. We are always thrilled to have you.
It's good to be back.
Thank you for joining us. Come back anytime. Where are you going next?
I'm home for a little bit. I got to go down to Florida, and then I'm going to, I think, Rome and then... Nigeria. Rome. I think those are the ones this month.
How fun would that be? Yeah. Do you ever get to see any of these places, or are you just in and out?
You know, a lot of times I see them early in the morning. I get up pretty early. And so, you know, the one in Rome, especially, I love walking around before I have to go to work you know, and take pictures and, you know, so see everything when there's nobody out there and it's kind of cool. And so that's usually I try to get out. So I know a lot of city, what a lot of cities look like between like 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. That's kind of my time.
That's a nice time.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. And, of course, Andy Anatko, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. You'll read his work in the Chicago Sun-Times or at CWOB.com, The Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. Follow him on Flickr and Instagram, and just keep an eye on his pictures because he's a great photographer, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Actually, before we go, can I ask you, if you ever pulled an Ed Snowden and went on the lam, Alex, how would we know?
There'd be someone who looked just like him in that chair every week.
My God, he's been in Marin for 3 months.
Life model decoy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just have to have a good loop. That's all.
If I ever have to stay one step ahead of some government agency, I'm coming. I'm paying you as my consultant.
See, I work for the Pixel Corps. That's why I'm all over the place.
Yes.
We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. Please stop by, say hi. Love seeing you. You can be in our chat room at irc.twit.tv. If you can't make it live, or if you want to be in the studio, email. Got a nice studio audience today. They were very quiet. Email tickets at twit.tv. We are moving into the new East Side studio on August 21st. So if you come to Mac Break Weekly before then, you'll be coming here to the old brick house. If you come after the 21st, our first Mac Break Weekly will be on the 23rd. You'll be coming to the new East Side studio.
When's the housewarming party?
Ah, that's a good question.
Ooh.
I think we want to get the house built first, and then we'll warm it. I can't get the camera running, but we were still a little ways to go.
Well, I'm making the drinks.
Nice.
You want to get some photos of the place clean before you destroy it with a house party.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. We don't have the carpet. The ceiling still is leaking ductwork. We just put in the raised floor for the studio, but I noticed it's not carpeted. And I also noticed that the lights and the cameras are still here, which tells me they're not there.
Four walls and a ceiling, and we'll be in business.
Yeah. Once you see this place start to become sparser and sparser, you'll know things are on their way.
There you go. Twit is one of those fancy schmancy organizations that has a roof.
And has one of everything. So there's no duplications. So we're moving on up to the East Side Studio August 21st. If you can't get to here live or on the feed, you can always watch on-demand audio or video after the fact. Go to twit.tv/MBW. You can also get it in, you know, any of the podcast applications like iTunes or the Twit apps you'll find on every platform. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Back to work, my friends, because guess what? Break time is over. Bye.